So the last 2 weeks, we had talked about seeing the one Lord, the Brahman, the total consciousness, everywhere, in the past, present, and future. Seeing the Lord in me, and the one Lord everywhere, and that alone is everything. And so I'm not separate from that consciousness. That consciousness is me, because everything is. Consciousness is me, is also everything. So I develop spontaneous love and identification with all beings. Everything is me. So the total oneness of the creation, not only animate objects, but even inanimate objects, like my car, my shoes, my clothes, everything is that one. So we develop a reverence for whatever we come in contact with, whoever we come in contact with. But in practice, that seems very difficult. You know, we can study in this class, read in the book, even I can talk about it. But when we go out and deal with the world, it seems problematic. You know, we have problems. So how do I tune myself to the higher? How do I practically apply this? And I can sit down and connect to the higher, is very beautifully explained in verse number 11. So a practical. It's like a theory is given, and then when we study science, first they will tell you the theory, and then they will give you practical experiments. You know, H2O, water is H2O. So then you do that, and then they'll give you a positive electrode and a negative, and dip it in water, and the hydrogen will move here, and the oxygen. So this is a practical technique for studying this higher self, which is verse number 11 in page 45. Atmanam aranim kritva pranavam chotararanim jnana nirmathana bhyasat pasham dahati panditah. They're using the word Atma, but Atma, is, depending on the context, can either mean the consciousness, the self. Sometimes they say the Atma, the soul, the consciousness. Or in some cases, when they say Atma, it means I, the ego. So the perceiver, feeler, thinker, the consciousness that is the same in all of us, functioning through the body, mind, and intellect. The body, mind, and intellect have no life of their own. They are basically inert. It is only when the consciousness functions through them that I become a perceiver, feeler, and thinker. With the body, I perceive. With the mind, I feel the emotion. With the intellect, I think the thought. So the perceiver, feeler, and thinker is the ego, the little I, the limited I, that I think myself to be Anil or Julie or whatever my name is, whatever male, female, that perceiver, feeler, thinker, I, Atmanam Aranim Kritva. Aranim means make it a lower Arni. And we'll talk about that. Lower Arni is the Atma, is the I, Kritva, making it. Pranavam, Pranava is another word for Om. Om is called Pranava in the Upanishads. So this Om, the total consciousness, is called Om. Pranavam cha uttararanim. So make pranava the higher arni and make myself the lower arni. And then what do you do? Jnana nirmathana abhyasat. Abhyasat means with the practice of jnana nirmathana, the churning of knowledge. And what happens with that? Pasham dahati panditaha. Panditaha means the wise person. Pasham dahati burns all bondages of the body, mind, and intellect. So this is a very interesting verse, and it comes from the Vedic times when they used to perform rituals, and they would have this square enclosure made of bricks, and in that they would put wood and all the offerings and the butter, the oil, the ghee and all. And the offerings would be made by the priests as they were chanting, and they would light the fire, and the fire would grow bigger, and they would put offerings as they chanted swaha swaha. They put butter, they put some nuts, put some more wood, you know, all those havan samagri they call, which is special material which is used for these yagnas. But how did they start the fire? They didn't have matchbox in those days, and they didn't want that somebody from your house, you know, they used to heat everything with fire. People would cook with fire at home. So they said, I can bring a stick from my house that is lit up. And no, they wanted a fresh fire that had not been used before. So it was very interesting. Maybe you have read it here, but they would take two bowls, upper arni and a lower arni, upper bowl and lower bowl. They were made of solid wood or sometimes of metal, but generally of wood. And what they would do is between those two bowls, they would put a very sharp stick, a stick with two sharp edges. So the stick which is sharpened at two edges. And then the priest who was trained would tie a rope around or a string around it and very rapidly churn it, very rapidly move the stick. And when stick moves against another one, it creates friction. And so with the friction, sparks would come out of the lower arni. And in the lower bowl, they would put some cotton, some dry wood or some, you know, the sawdust kind of thing. Kindling. So which would catch fire with the spark. So once it caught fire, then that fire was transferred to this enclosure, the Havan Kunda, and then the ceremony would start. So it would not start unless they had to have everything dry, everything well prepared. So that same example is used by the teacher because the student was familiar, because he was a student of the Vedic times. You and I are not familiar because we haven't seen that, but that student had seen it many times. It's like today, if somebody were to give an example, they would talk about computers or, you know, modern economics or politics. So here he says that make yourself the lower arni. Make yourself the lower bowl and make Om the higher bowl. So Om is the higher and I am lower. And I'm far away. At this moment, I think that God or consciousness is somewhere far away, maybe in heaven or maybe in the temple or church. Even though he is within me, I don't feel it. I feel that God is far away. I can't reach. Sometime, maybe in the future, you know, after 10 years of meditation, maybe when I'm sitting somewhere in the Himalayas or somewhere in some quiet place in Grand Canyon, suddenly I will realize. So we have this idea that God is somebody very distant from me, and in some future time and some future place, I may know him. Maybe if not this lifetime, maybe in 2-3 lifetimes, sometime to mil jayega, sometime I'll find him. So that is our thinking. But they are saying that all you have to do is connect. Just as the stick has to be connected, the lower and the upper have to be connected with the stick. So I and Om have to be connected. Through chanting Om, but not mechanically, not saying Om, 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 not like that, but Om as the symbol of God. Because what is Om? Om represents God, represents Brahman. They call it Shabda Brahman. Means what it means is that God cannot be described in words, cannot be understood, cannot be explained. Yeah, a form of God we can see, Ganpati or Jesus or Buddha or Krishna or Mother Saraswati. But that formless consciousness, which is all-pervading, is very hard for us to conceptualize, hard for us to think, hard for us to relate. So Om connects us to that. Om is the first sound. They say that when the universe was created, Om was the first sound. That's why even the Bible says first God alone was, and the Word was with him. The Word, what they mean is sound, Brahman. The sound was the first thing that was created. And from that Om, the entire universe, the sound of Om, all the languages of the world came, all the ABCD and ka, kha, ga, and everything came from that. And the entire creation started with that. And Om is not just, so why Om? Why don't you put Coca-Cola? Or why don't you put out or in? No. Om has a lot of significance. It is the cosmic sound. If you listen to brooks or, you know, rivers, not the big river, but like a small river or a stream going along the rocks. If you pay attention, the sound you hear is Om. In fact, in space, when those who have listened with the telescopes, they have heard that there is a sound of Om that vibrates through the all. There was a movie where they talk of, where they come in touch with this advanced civilization, and they mention that that the sound that you hear throughout creation is the sound of Om. It's not just an imaginary. Somebody sat down at one time. These rishis, these great masters in their meditation heard it, and that's what they told us, that that is the cosmic sound. That's why Om has a lot of power. They say when you chant Om with your mouth, and then of course the Gayatri mantra, the entire one that Hindus know, but chanting, it energizes your whole being if you chant Om with understanding, with meaning. So connect with the understanding, with the chanting, connect myself to the higher Arni, to Om. And then you churn it. What it means by churning means this knowledge that we have got from the scriptures, from Kevalya Upanishad, from Gita, from Bible, whatever texts. Churn that knowledge in your mind. Don't just say, okay, Thursday class over, go put the book away, and then next Thursday, oh, pick it up again. No, not like that. I should read this again. I should contemplate upon it, think upon it. What I have heard, what I have read here, how does that apply to me? That's called churning of knowledge. On Sunday, we have a Gita class. Same thing, you know, whatever we have studied, we need to go home and think about it, apply it, how it helps me, how it works in my life. So then only the knowledge will become my knowledge. Otherwise, it is Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge. He has written the book. But how will it become my knowledge? When I churn the knowledge in my mind. So just as that priest is churning that stick, I have to churn the knowledge. And then the fire that is created is the fire of knowledge, the fire of understanding. Oh, I see that light of understanding. And that burns all the bondages. What do you mean by bondages? At the body level, we are attached to things of the body, you know, my possessions, my relatives, my things, you know, if my car breaks, I get depressed, something happens to my house, my office, my business. That is all at the body level. Mind is the emotions, you know, I love this person, he doesn't love me back, he doesn't say I love you, you know, or this person hurt my feelings, didn't do this, didn't do that. So we are attached to the mind, to our emotions. And at the intellect level, we are attached to our concepts, our ideas. You know, I belong to this religion. So everybody who doesn't belong to my religion should be, you know, converted or should be slaughtered or should be killed. Or I'm a Republican, so all Democrats are bad. You know, I'm a liberal, all conservatives. Abortion, guns, you know, we get so attached to our concepts. That this alone is right, and anybody who disagrees with me should be shot. And that's what these mass murderers do. You know, they go around killing people who don't agree with their point of view. So that is called attachment to concepts. It could even be a good concept. You know, I want to make the world a better place. But then we get so attached to that, that anybody who interferes with my process of curing, improving the world should be, you know, put aside or should not. So getting attached to any concept, whether good or bad, is an attachment. Yes, I do my best, but if things don't happen, okay, the Lord, it's not meant to be. Same way emotionally, I always cannot have, you know, good emotion. There will be good and bad, so the ability to detach from that. And same thing, the objects. My body may not be healthy at all times. My objects, one day the stock market is up and the second day is down. One day I'm rich, second day I'm a beggar. That's going to happen. You know, my health, one day I'm healthy, one day I'm unhealthy. So we are so attached to these concepts. But if you attach to Om and become one with that, say that that alone is real and that is alone me, then we have talked about that many times. But again and again, we need to emphasize that. Okay, do not give too importance to physical comforts, emotional comforts, intellectual comforts. Just pay attention to the highest. So what that does, it destroys our ignorance, it destroys our bondages, it reduces our attachment, it reduces my dependence. Because at this moment I'm very dependent on my objects, my, you know, love and concepts. slowly I become detached. I still function. It's not that I stop taking care of my body or I stop loving people, but I don't depend on them for my happiness because I am happiness. I am that Brahman, that happiness. So now the rest of the talk, we have finished with this verse. The rest of the talk, I thought I would spend a little time talking about Om. Om is such a big subject, you can talk for hours. But in brief, there are a few points about Om that we should understand why it is so important. So when we chant Om, it's not O-M, it is translated as A-U-M, Om. So A-U-M is Om. So A and then we chant Om and then we have silence. So when we are chanting Om, you don't just chant Om, 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 Om like that. You chant Om and then give it some time, have the silence. Then again, the Om starts. The Om starts from silence and merges back into the silence. So the masters say A represents the waking state. See, I go through three states, waking, dream, and deep sleep. I'm awake in the morning, then I may be dreaming, and then I may be in deep sleep. Some of you may be there right now. But the point is that we go through these three stages of waking, dream, and deep sleep throughout the day. I mean, at night we sleep and then we dream and then we wake up. So A-U-M represents waking, dream, and deep sleep, and then that is followed by silence. And the silence is called Turiya, or the state of awakening, the state of realization. So when I'm chanting Om, I'm thinking about those three states, and then in the silence, I connect with the inner being. So the silence, that's why they say, as we said in the beginning of the class, should not be only oral or speech, but should be a silence of the mind. And that can happen with practice. With practice, you can develop a relative quietude. Of course, the mind is meant to move, but when I want to quieten it, I should be able to slow it down. So just practicing slowing down. And how do we do that? By slowing down throughout the day. You know, at my work, I work, you know, carefully, but not rushed, not trying to do too much at one time, you know, limit the amount of work, if you can limit that, take some time off when you have a little break in the day, instead of just going and talking to some people and all, just take your lunch and sit aside in one side and just try to observe silence when you have a little time. Or just take, you know, maybe go for a walk, you know, and see, observe nature and take deep breaths. So as you practice silence throughout the day and as you are walking, maybe chanting Om or chanting your mantra. So and sometimes even just walking in silence, even you don't even have to chant Om. Just observe the trees and the birds and be a silent witness. Get up in the morning and just spend a few minutes after your meditation, maybe sit in the backyard. And just watch the birds and then listen to them. I try to do that sometimes. Nowadays, it's quite cold. You don't hear that many birds. But in better weather, you just go out and close your eyes and then try to distinguish. There are four, five, six different birds singing on the trees and you try to pay attention. It's a beautiful meditation when your mind is focusing on the silence and what is it. So that silence, when you can cultivate more and more, then you are more and more in that Turiya state, in that realized state. So that is the meaning of Om. And silence is what is more important than even the sound. Silence is more important. That's why in meditation also, we start by initially watching your breath, you know, relaxing the body. Today we'll do the chanting of Om. And then after that, we try to maintain silence where you go deep within. Then in the Upanishad, it is said another place, Pranava Dhanu Sharohi Atma Brahma Tat Lakshyam Uchyate. So he says, the teacher says, make Om the bow and make yourself, the ego, the arrow. So what do we mean by that? Say now an archer, you know, if you have seen archery or some of you may have even done it, there is a bow and the archer takes the arrow, stretches the thread, and his goal is, say, there is a target, you know, these multiple circles. So he's with his full attention, his eye is centered on the target. He's looking at nothing else, just the center. And with his hand is very still, his eye is still, his whole body. If his hand is shaking or the bow is shaking, he's not going to hit the target. So the bow is still, I am, my hand is still, and the arrow is perfectly directed. And then he releases it, and if the arrow has been hit correctly, it goes in the center of and sinks into the target. So the arrow doesn't only hit, it actually sinks into the target. So here the teacher says, make Om the bow. Make Om the means and make yourself the arrow. And what is the target? Target is Brahman, God, the conscious. Brahma tat lakshyam. Make God the target that I have to reach. Actually, God is with us, within us at all time, but we feel a distance. So using Om, shoot yourself clearly directed. See, the person has to see the target clearly. So similarly, I have to know what is my goal. My goal is to reach that Brahman, that consciousness, become one with him. And that is what they mean. Just as the arrow sinks into the target, if it is shot well, if the arrow is sharp, similarly, I have to sink into Brahman. I have to dissolve my ego. Right now, what separates me from God is the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, that I am a body, mind, and intellect. I'm separate from God. So this separateness has to be dissolved. And just as the arrow becomes one with the target, I have to become one with the Om. That I am that Om. I am Om is not separate. God is not separate. It's not that I am this body, mind, and intellect, and there is God within me, and God is making me talk. That is one way. But the other one is God alone is doing everything. I am nobody. I am just an instrument. Then it says the arrow should be steady, the bow should be steady, the hand should be steady, the eye should be steady. So what it means is that when I sit for meditation, my mind should be steady, should be focused, should not be running around, okay, what am I going to do after meditation? What am I going to eat for breakfast? Whom am I going to meet? Or what did she say yesterday? He said, no. At this moment, my mind should be steady and focused. So then only the target will be hit. Otherwise, the target will not be hit. And it should be constant. Constant remembrance. Not, oh, sometime I remember, sometime I don't. The last is, what happens at the time of death? See, at the time of death, the individual drops the mind and intellect, his ego drops the body, and then it waits, it's the subtle body, waits for another suitable body to be available. And it is said that what is your last thought at the time of death is where you reach. And it is said that. It says that if your last thought is of God, you will reach him. But if your last thought is of money or my son or my daughter or my wife or my business, then your mind is still in the material. So, but it says that at the last time, in a moment, I will think about God. How do we know what is going to be our last moment? Number two, if you have been thinking about something throughout your life, suddenly at the time of death, you cannot suddenly, you know, reach, think about. There's a story about this person who was a very rich businessman, very rich. And his whole life he spent in accumulating money. And finally he was on his deathbed and he was very sick. So the children took him home from the hospital. They said, well, keep him at home in hospice, have nurses to take care of him. He doesn't want to die in the hospital. And he was breathing his last. They knew that probably in the next few minutes, you know, he would be gone. And so it is said that if you listen to the chanting of the Bhagavad Gita or some scriptures, then it uplifts your mind. So they called 11 pandits, 11 scholars to chant. And they were together simultaneously chanting the Gita. It was beautiful atmosphere. Candle was lit and incense was burning around him. And everything was so pure and spiritual. They thought, oh, now his last thought will be of God because he's listening to the chanting. So it so happened that towards the end, he just gained consciousness for a moment and he opened his eyes and his son was there and he asked him softly, what is happening? He said, God. So he said, Father, we have all these pandits. They are chanting the Bhagavad Gita. So think about Bhagavad Gita as you leave your body. So he opens his eyes. He says, 11 pandits. He thinks to himself, how much must this be costing? And that was his last thought. So the kids tried everything, but his last thought was still on money. How much is it going to cost me? How much are my children paying? So if you have never thought of God, no matter what happens, you are not going to think. So start thinking about God from now itself. Not only, that's why it says in the 8th chapter, Omit ek aksharam brahma, vyaharan mam anuswaram, yat prajati tyajan deha, tato yati param gatim. So one who chants Om, thinking of me constantly at all times, at the time of death, he reaches me. That's what God says. That's what Krishna says. So that is the benefit of chanting Om, that the chanting of Om connects me to that total consciousness, the Lord, who is formless, who is also form. He's also Krishna and Jesus and Buddha and Saraswati and all, but he's also that formless. So Om, being sound, has no form. Even though here we have given it a form because that's the lettering in Sanskrit. But actually the sound is formless. You know, the sound has no form. So remembering that, not only at the time of death, but throughout the day, connecting myself to the higher Om, I reach that. So this is a very, very practical, very beautiful verse, which we can apply every day in our life. So that's what the teacher is telling us. How to connect my ego with the higher through the chanting of Om. Any thoughts, any questions?
This tonight kind of caught me all day. I've just been thinking about stuff that really ultimately means nothing, mm-hmm. in the grand scheme of things.
Right. You can do that by putting reminders. See, what you can do is in your car, have a little symbol. Whether you can put Jesus, you can put Krishna, you can put Om, maybe next to your sink, maybe have that on your work table. So reminders that connect you, and then you can take occasions that, okay, as I'm driving, I'll be chanting Om, or before I leave my house, or even, every time I sit in the bathroom, for a few minutes, I'll breathe. So it doesn't matter where you remember. It's not that one place is clean or one place. There is no everything. Wherever you remember, God is good. Or take time out, as I said. Just sit in your lunch break or in your 10-minute break or sometime if you have time. Or go for a walk. Make opportunities or reminders. Or when you're walking and you see the sunrise, or you see the sunset, or you hear the birds chirping, see the birds flying, see a beautiful flower, see a child smiling. So make these opportunities to connect you to the higher. So find occasions, or some people even have a bracelet, so you can even do that. But having reminders, a necklace, Om or whatever. Mm-hmm. So make opportunities that will remind. Otherwise, life is very, gets very complicated. But if you can make, so that when you sit in the car, you see God's picture, you at least connect and, say, be with me. Before leaving the house, sit down in your prayer room, or if you have a prayer room, or where you have a picture or statue of God, sit and for a few minutes remember. When you go to bed at night, what I try is that, I think I've told you before, when I lie down in my bed, I just consciously relax my body from head to toe, then breathe deep and observe the breath. And as I chant, each breath goes in and out, chant Om Namah Shivaya or Shri Krishna Sharna Mama or the Father and the Son and the Holy. So whatever is your mantra, chant that before you go to bed, so that the last thought in the mind is of mind of God. And when you wake up, don't get out of bed until you have chanted that mantra a few times. Just chant in your mind before you get out of bed. Don't just rush out, but sit there and enjoy that morning, where you're just getting up and you've had a good night's sleep and thank God. And so find occasions what they call as pointers that will remind you of that. You can have pictures in your house, whatever, you know, reminds you of that, whatever connects you. Find every opportunity to remember. So the more you do that, the more you connect. It's like, you know, kids, you know, in their room, they'll have pictures of, you know, the basketball players, you know, Michael Jordan or Kobe, or they'll have pictures of the rock star or, you know, actors or dancers or musicians. Why? It reminds me of that. Well, you know, actually my son, I was surprised, he had a huge picture of Einstein on his wall instead of having rock stars or musicians. Tall picture. I don't know where he got it from, but you know, so that is good. You know, that means it's inspiring him to be something special. So connect, you know, find opportunities to connect yourself to the higher. But that's a very good point. Thank you. I myself get so caught up in the work, it becomes very hard to remember. But even in between, if you can find occasions to do that. So we have more time today, so we'll do some breathing. We'll do some simple breathing and then we'll be chanting Om. So we can just put your fingers above your eyebrow, above your nostril. And with the thumb, use your right hand. With the thumb, control your right nostril. And with the ring finger, the left nostril. So breathe in and out through the left nostril 3 times, deeply. Now close the left nostril and breathe in and out through the right nostril 3 times, deeply. Now we'll alternate, breathe in through the left and breathe out through the right. In through the left, out through the right, in through the right, out through the left. Keep alternating. Both the switches will be down here. Bring your hand slowly down. Chanting Om 3 times as we have done before, 3 times will be loudly, 3 times whisper, and then after that chant Om in the mind. We chant Om slowly with full attention. And observe the silence between the chanting of the Om. Relax the body from head to toe. Eyes are closed. Back is erect but not stiff. Body is completely relaxed from head to toe and from toes back to the head. Especially relax your neck and shoulders. Pay special attention to that. Now breathe slowly with full attention on the breath. will chant Om 3 times audibly. Pay attention to the silence between the Om. Now 3 times we'll whisper, just minimal, only where you can hear it. Now continue to chant Om mentally in your mind. Pay attention to the silence. And then when your mind becomes still, you can stop chanting and go deep into the silence. If your mind wanders, then continue to chant Om till your mind becomes quiet.
Oh.